Just know you're right and go ahead, the tallyman says. His wife did not like the thing. Made him put it outside when he takes his pants off to get in bed. Said it keeps her awake nights. He could not hear it no more, except when it wanted him to do something. But she said it made talky-talk noises all the time that made her insides feel itchy, made her feel like she had to shake herself to stop it. Maybe that is why. 'Cause he would say, no, he won't do it. She made him get out of bed, poking at him, and he goes to sleep outside by his lonesome, and then she gets up and throws his pants out the door after him into his face. The land was good there, but there was sure better parts, and parts that were better was parts further on downriver and across it. Parts that most of all he wanted. He talked about it all the time. The more land, the more he could hole up and keep or just sell out. He had seen a few take land and sell it, never spade it, never cut more than a clearing for a cabin that was never lived in. Take it, sell it, trade for more. But that is how the Indians troubled them, that does. Taking land that no one had, but some surveyor marked, took up that land. But the Indians remembered all the same. And sometimes, two or three times, they got into the cabins there and burned them up. And sometimes, two or three times, they burned up the white folk in them. Burned alive. And that was not the worst of it. Hunted bear in the creek and cave country of Kentucky then. He dug his pits. He puts a dog in the pits to bait the bear. He puts pig's blood onto the dog, makes him rank and interesting to a bear. Soon bears coming on like a traffic in Baltimore. Coming this way and that way. Kept the dog alive with the first one killed. But then the dog was ate up. That bear had a mouth like Noah's fish. Swallowed it half down and bit it off in two parts. Hinder parts fell on the ground before he could get a knife. Killed that bear too. Big one. 300 if a pound. Fat from summer. Could not get their carcasses out of that hole till he had them skinned and half butchered, and the smell of that bloody meat and guts got more bear down on him. Two bear jumped in together for to dance with him, and he was a bad dancer. And they did not like him. They was going to waltz him for a widow, but he got a knife in one between the eyes, and while the other had him in a hug, he worked his knife to his heart. But he near got his arm ripped off for it, and his scalp tore up bad by bear teeth. Bear meat feeds boys good. Wife did not care for it. Said it was greasy and stringy, and that be true, but that is why it kept and got moldering a little, and you didn't mind it if it got fetid, 'cause it was more tender then. She always complained anyway. She wanted a glaze on the windows and curtains. She wanted dresses, ribbons. She wanted them things that money might buy. He thought he could tame her down, but she was a nasty little bitch and barked at him like he was a stranger. When he got in the door to when he got up and left, kicking her, quiets sometimes. The boys took up her side. Of course they would. She fed them. You know you're right, and go ahead, he told the little bastards. He brought home another woman he had found. Left for dead by redskins, but still some use. Quiet, she was. Did what she was told. Sucked his cock like a town whore. This situation was going to cause grief, but he was going to do what he wanted. Then the talisman told him to go join General Jackson and put them Indians out of the territory. The call came from militia, and because he had a gun and shot and powder and a horse, he was a sergeant and given a body of men from the county to organize. He visited their farms and called them out. Those who did not want to come, he struck in the face with a fist and called coward, and generally that persuaded them. But a couple fellows took off back over to Virginia, and one left woman and farm behind him like they was no more than some old bucket with a hole in it. Matron came by with an afternoon treat on the cart. She had brought iced tea, which was welcome to see, the day being so unbearably hot. The soldiers all took some, as did myself and those other few guests, the old children or grandchildren of our old heroes. And he took a glass, too, having to hold it with both his hands because his one shook so. The sweat on the glasses dripped onto the stone porch floor where we sat, and he continued his story. General Jackson led us to the Indian longhouses, the villages along the Chattahoochee, and some renegades and half-breed scouts who hated these Indians on account of some feud about women went in and drew first blood, sneaking in and counting coup on a few, hitting to kill or maim, and then running back out with a whole goddamn village chasing onto them right into the ambush. And they sat up and shot them like they was horses in a corral fenced in at all sides. They ran and ran in a circle, and they dropped them dead with 2-3 shots apiece to each of them. Bullets shot like that cuts up the body. Guts and brains and eyeballs blowed out, mangled limbs, made some men sick to their stomachs to see it. But whiskey in the morning, whiskey lunch, and whiskey dinner kept him strong and steady. General saw him kill 3 his own self, and when some of the warriors escaped the ambush and ran back to their longhouses, he hollered to his men to follow them and chase them warriors, firing shot and catching up on wounded and stabbing them in the back, and once he got to the village, he urged his contingent to burn them out. He himself set fire to a longhouse of several families, women and children included, and stood back and shot those who tried to get out. He had to back way out to the wood line because the heat was so intense as to render the fat out of his own flesh. Neither women nor children of them redskins made a sound in their painful deaths, only the crackling of wood and burning bodies to be heard, but the smell of it stunk in his nose for a day or two. General Jackson clapped his back and said to him he was a good man with a gun and should always be welcome on his campaigns, and gave him a commission. Call him Major, then. On account of this service to his country and General Jackson, he got the land he wanted where he wanted it, 5 or 6 parcels he wanted. And he set them up and sold them and got more and set them up and sold them. And Jackson and many also did the same. That way, the country soon was civilized right, and the land mapped square and fit, and all the Indians were driven all away. Major heard soon after that General Jackson was wanting to be president of the United States. So he threw in with him. He himself could not write, though he could read, but cared not to read. And he got others to write for him, got broadsheets printed, and got his neighbors to carry them one to the next, and so campaigned across the county. And the general, he took notice and sent along a letter to thank him and some whiskey. Log Cabin and Hard Cider. That was the slogan. Or Whiskey and Win. Or Burn the Banks and Butcher the Indians. Or vice versa. All were good words, well meant. It was a nasty electoral contest. In those rough days in our republic, no scurrilous rumor was too savage or too vile to repeat upon an opponent for any public office, and people were inclined to believe the most unsavory matters. Oh, say that the general was a whoremonger, that his wife a whore, that the Creek Indian boy he had took into his own was his wife's own miscreant bastard, after some licentiousness is told in the malicious slur and unjust slander of her. She died of the grief of it, it is said. And maybe she was just as glad to be dead than to follow him to Washington and the kind of things to happen. But the general was elected and vowed to serve if only to spite them who had ruined his wife. Major heard this and took his horse and rode over to see and to celebrate his inauguration, and for another good reason, too. He found our capital city in a swamp, and sheep at pasture and pigs in a sty around the White House. And in the muddy streets, as many brothels as there were booksellers, the two being the principal industries of the place, still are, I hear. And he made great use of one and none of the other while he awaited his new president. Books is worthless as money. Both of them no more than paper and print and opinion, he told his fellow citizens, and they all agreed. And by God, the talisman told him, it was time. The general is going to drive the bankers out like Jesus did the money changers. Land is real. Land and what he can kill on it and grow on it and no more than that is real. Paper, books, and banks is the same villainy, and the general is here to rid it. Don't read. Can read, but don't care to read. Books never do no good. Mama read the Bible. What good had done her? Better she had a knife in it. Best, she should have took that knife and put it hard into the son of a bitch who tried to get himself between her legs. Better she had killed him or cut his pecker off and kept herself from any children, let alone the ones that died. Best that he'd not been born. Jackson's journey from Nashville meandered to Washington and took 3 weeks, and everywhere along the route he was greeted by large crowds. In Pittsburgh, where he switched from steamboat to carriage, the crowd was so great that it took him about an hour to make his way from the dock to the hotel, a mere quarter mile away. Pennsylvania Avenue was crowded with carriages of every description, from the splendid baronet and coach down to wagons and carts filled with women and children, some in shiny finery and some in dirty rags. For it was the people's president. With hotel rooms unavailable even at triple their regular thieving rates, people slept on the tavern floors and even out in open fields. He reminded some complainers, generally unhappy at Jackson's election, of the invasion of the unwashed Hun into Rome. On the Thursday morning that was the inauguration, the open area in front of the Capitol was packed by 10 in the morning, hours before the ceremony. The crowd became so unruly trying to swarm up the steps to the portico where the ceremony would be held that a ship's cable was stretched across the stairs to hold them back. Major got up from a drunk and went up the boulevard to the Capitol building, wending through the crowds, and recognized by friends of Jackson, was permitted to stand up close to where the old lion should be soon distinguished, our president. It was a great crowd of common people, Thousands of people gathered or milled, not segregated by any distinctions of rank or wealth, but in plain fact, mostly Westerners like himself. All mostly dressed plain, or some rough in boots and fur skin caps, and not a fancy hat among them. They had come to collect in an immense mass round the Capitol rotunda itself, murmuring, but orderly and tranquil, their eyes fixed on the front of that edifice, waiting the appearance of their president in that portico. The door at the portico from the rotunda opened, and first preceded by military marshals in spangled uniforms, and then surrounded by the black-gowned judges of our Supreme Court, the old general himself emerged with his well-known gray locks, the shagged mane of that old lion, and his iron stare. A man like us, who does not cut his hair for society, and wears no wigs and no sense. He steps out tall like a tree above the rest of them, and bows to no one of these, but to the people who come to see him, to we the people who greet him now with a sudden shout that rends the air and would make Adam tremble. That spectacle, that moment shot like a gun, when all the eyes of that huge sea, that motley mob, caught sight of their great leader. All hats went off at once, and all 10,000 upturned, exultant faces shining up radiated such joy, they made a glory like reflected sunlight on Jackson standing before them. Jackson stared at the crowd for a moment, startled by the roar, and then, with the instincts that had brought him to power, he bowed before the majesty of the people, as he said, and cheers redoubled in volume. Obeying the gesture of his hand, a breathless silence followed the great roar, and all strained to hear him. The great multitude completely still, listening to catch the sound of his commanding voice, and though it was so low as to be heard only by those nearest to him, level like he was, a man speaking to a friend chair to chair over a cup of whiskey, he gave his simple speech, and somehow everyone heard it anyway, like it was spoken just to each personally. Major then heard what he came to hear. It will be my sincere and constant desire to observe toward the Indian tribes within our limits a just and liberal policy, and to give that humane and considerate attention to their rights and their wants, which is consistent with the habits of our government and the feelings of our people. Yes, sir. Consistent with the habits of our government and the feelings of our people, feelings like his very own, is just what he came to hear. The matron came to tell us that it was supper time, and I should leave. I was rising to depart, but he nodded at me to sit a moment. He drew upon his iced tea and then explained, holding his glass at his lips. He finished his thought. He had come to know whether he may keep the lands, whether the general would honor the easements under those lands which are salutary to the heathens, which they would not till and do not improve, but leave to wilderness and uselessness, and whether he would advance the better man upon this dead, dead planet. He sipped his tea again. He put down the glass. His president was like-minded to him, believed in his right, his natural right to overspread, to possess the whole of the continent by force if need be, to take hold of what lies virgin and wanting and open before us. Oh, he does not claim the savages had less rights to it than he. But we got more and better weapons, and therefore the greater right to win. We got Jackson, and we had the Army of the United States behind him. That, and all them other superior whites, them righteous, religious, and righteously ambitious, true to what causes they may make, clamoring at the gates, and overrunning the lands behind him, and taking what he had not already righteously taken for himself. The matron took him off for supper, and I left for the night.